Somebody sent me, how do you pronounce it? Meme? Okay, about this fellow who says, he says, I don't get it. He says, I've been davening by myself for the last 25 years. All of a sudden, there's this rabbi who never davens by himself, always davens a minyan. He's telling me how to do it. What does he know about davening by himself? So I thought it was a good line because, you know, like, what do I know about davening b'yechid? It's like, I've been davening with Mitzibur, like, you know, Baruch Hashem, pretty much of the vast majority of my frum existence, you know, Baruch Hashem. Okay. So I want to share with you two thoughts from Rav Hirsch back to back in the Psukim at the beginning of the parasha. And I think there's some beautiful lessons there, and then maybe some other thoughts as well. I want to talk about parasha things. Again, I don't want to make the conversation about the coronavirus because, again, to sort of maintain our normalcy of that not everything is about the coronavirus. It's clearly a message which we need to take seriously. Maybe we'll talk one or two of these about that afterwards. But I want to at least start with something from the parasha. So at the beginning of the parasha, we have the mitzvah of what's called Trumas Hadeshin and the mitzvah of Hitzoas Hadeshin. So that's the first two psukim. Well, not first two psukim, it's Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Dalet. First Pasuk talks about the inyan of having the maracha, which the karbanos are going to be consumed upon, the fire. And then there's a mitzvah of what's called Trumas Hadeshin, which means the kohen has to wear big day kahuna, which means it's a din of avoda. He takes a certain amount away from the mizbeach. He has to put it next to the mizbeach. The pasuk says v'soma etzel mizbeach, so chazal darshan v'soma kula, he can't drop any of it. V'soma shal yafaz, he can't even let it spread. He has to put it v'soma benachas, he has to place it gently next to the mizbeach. And there's a fascinating idea that the Mora has a rule, it's again Psachim in the second parak, a halacha concept that when you know something which is a korban has a din of me'ila on it, something which belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu, if a human being takes it, it's considered a me'ila and he has din of me'ila. Once it's nasis mitzvah, so the mitzvah process has been completed with it, there's no din of me'ila anymore. The Mora says, darshan's from the pasuk of a somebody, it's placed, that's in his back, and that's where it stays. The Trumas Hadeshin had me'ila on it even after. Forever, it never loses its din of me'ila, which means its presence there next to the mizbeach was part of the avoda. It was an ongoing part of the purpose of the avoda. It wasn't just so. It wasn't just happened to be there, and putting it there. This is mamash part of the avoda. So it's called not called nasis mitzvah. So that it's done with. It's still ongoing. Hitzos hadashim, which is the next pasuk, does not require bidei kahuna. And that was when Rashi points out, that was not something which had to be done every day. Whenever the amount of ash on the Mizbeach got to the point where there wasn't room to bring the new karbonas, you would take the old ash away, and that's called a tzos hadeshin. That was not considered an avoda, did not require dafka bigde kuna. And that process, there's a question whether this is in the Pashas is mashma, that there is a din of nasi mitzvasa. So Trumas Hadeshin is quite different than Hitzos Hadeshin. Hitzos Hadeshin that might be also not called nasi mitzvasa, but there's two different things over here. So what's this idea of Trumas Hadeshin, that it's that this idea of this ash being next to the Mizbeach is significant enough that it's considered an ongoing avoida, whereas the rest of the korban is done with. So he suggests the following. He says, you know, that we sort of picture that the idea of avoda is new, exciting, creative, etc. I did avoda yesterday, and that avoda really, in a certain sense, is ongoing. It continues. What I did yesterday is what I'm supposed to do today, what I will do tomorrow, what I will do the next day, etc. We don't need to find new ways to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't need to find creative, innovative, exciting, new, exciting, inspiring things. But rather, what we need to do is take the old and hold on to it. So Trumas Hadeshin was, we need to take some of that avoda from the previous day and make sure that it continues and it's still there. That's his first thought. Hitzos Hadeshin is the opposite. Hitzos Hadeshin is that what you did yesterday can't hold you back from something new today. You know, you can't rest on your laurels. I once was discussing this with one of the older members of the Kollel. Now we don't call him the Kollel anymore, but it was a person named Rabbi Avraham Shoshana in Telz. And Rabbi Shoshana started a machon called Ofek, Machon Ofek, which is they work with Kisvei Yad, and he got the rights to Kisvei Yad of a whole Geniza from Moscow called the Ginsburg Geniza, and many manuscripts, and he's published different swarmi. The Rabbeinu David on the Sechtes Pesachim, he was the one who did that. The Chedushei Raman, the Sechtes Gittin, and the Sechtes Kedushin, many very well used, very respected swarim, which we found from the Rishonim for these Kisvei Yad. So here's a person, now Kisvei Yad sounds like it's an easy thing to figure out. It's not. First of all, you have to learn how to read the script. It's a different type of script. The way the manuscripts work, sometimes you have a manuscript which was written by the original author himself, but many times that wasn't true. But they didn't have printing. So if I wanted a copy of that sefer, what I would have to do is I would send a scribe who would copy it and bring it back to me. So you could have 10, 15, 20 copies of the same sefer, each one being copied from the original or a copy of the copy. So I have to decide which one, and obviously there's going to be a certain amount of errors which are going to creep in. Which one's right? Which manuscript is the right one? How do I decide? How can I prove it? And it can't just be because I think so, but let's see if we can prove it. The Rabbeinu David says this point over here, and we have Rabbeinu David in Masechta Sanhedrin, and he says a similar idea, and there he clearly uses this language over there. So probably this is the right one over here. The Ran, there's the Kisvei Yad of the Ran. Well, there's a Ran somewhere else who says that. There's somebody else who quotes the Ran. So yeah, I have to be familiar enough and knowledgeable enough of all the different swarms to start quoting them and making these comparisons and figure out what's correct and what's incorrect. So it's a lot of work. And then obviously you want to write footnotes to what do you think he's trying to say that should be help people understand it. So putting out one of these Kisvei Yad in a way which is really effective is a lot of work. So I asked Rabbi Shoshana one time, so what do you do, when you finish, how do you celebrate? It's mostly a mesechta, a siyum on a mesechta doesn't come to this idea of he could spend years on one of these sort of. He said usually he and his wife would have something special for dinner, and the next day he starts with the next sefer. That's the line that he said to me. So I said to myself once, I understand the balance between the healthy self-esteem and gaiva with that story. Healthy self-esteem means, you have to be proud of what you accomplished. You did something of very tremendous value. But the Balgaiva says, I deserve praise for that. I don't need to start working on the next thing because I'm such a wonderful guy. Look what I did. The other person says, okay, that's wonderful, but that's yesterday's. What about today's? I don't need to try garner respect for what I've accomplished. I need to keep accomplishing. So that was my reaction to that story. So Rav Hirsch basically says that this is the balance between Truma Sedeshen and Ritzos Sedeshen. Truma Sedeshen is, we need to recognize that Yiddishkeit is not about looking for new ways. Tefillah, mitzvahs, we've been doing the same thing which our fathers are doing, our grandfathers have been doing, generations have been doing. That's the way to do it. We don't need to find a new way of doing something. So that's the idea of holding on to what was before. That's the Truma Sedeshen. And that's so significant that it remains with the Milas Korban for as long as it's there. And the other hand, Hitzos Sedeshen tells me, don't sit on your laurels. That was yesterday's pile on the Mizbeach. Today there's a new pile on the Mizbeach. There's new work to do. So there's a Masara from generation to generation, and it's the same Masara of how to do it. We look for new ways of doing things. That's on the one end. On the other end, we're looking for recognizing that I can't just rest on what has been done before. And that's the element of humility. The next step is that there's a fascinating Chavis Lavavis. Rivera Wine has a great story. Chavis Lavavis doesn't say that. But, that he was once, he has wonderful children, but children are children when they're children. They didn't want to take out the garbage. So he said, in the Beis HaMikdash, it was considered an honor to take out the ash, take out the garbage, right? The Kohanim would fight for Trumas Hadeshen. Who had the right to Trumas Hadeshen? Right? The Kohen dressed up special to take out the Deshen, you know? So his children, being Rabbi Wein's children, being pretty on the ball kids, he says, Daddy, it was such a special thing. We want you to have the opportunity to do that. We don't want to take that away from you. So he was bested by his kids, as he puts it. The Kohen took out the ash. You know, you could picture in a certain sense the Torah should delegate that responsibility to the Levi or to the Yisrael. You know, the Kohen's job is the Avodah, the Karbonis, you know, taking out the ash afterwards. That's the janitor's job. Like, you know, that's not the job of the Chashuva person. The Torah B'davka says of the Kohen, the big Rabbi Kohen, Mr. Kohen, you know, over here, is the one who's also going to be doing that part of the Avodah as well. So the Chavos Avos in Shara Kaniya says that point. The Chavos Avos says that there was an element, it was a lesson in hachanoah, in humility, and willing to lower yourself, that it's not beneath your dignity to do whatever it takes. A story in conjunction with that, in Kelm, there was a recognition that godless greatness is the ability to serve other people, to take other people's feelings into consideration and be able to serve other people. So it was considered the most chashuv people in the yeshiva were the ones who had the schus to do the most menial jobs, because you deserve to be allowed to work on yourself and take this. Really lower yourself in the service of other people. That's a tremendous accomplishment. The best people in the yeshiva have a right to have that opportunity. So we don't live in this world, but you know, the most menial job in the yeshiva was, you live in a world where they had outhouses, was cleaning out the outhouse. Right? You know, the person had to go over there X amount of times a year, and they had to deal with the buildup of the excrement which is there. Right? So the most chashuv people in the yeshiva were given would vie for the opportunity to do that job, because it means you're willing to degrade yourself in the service of other people, and that was the vision of the Alter von Kelm and his talmidim, to recognize that greatness is the willingness to serve other people. So it's fascinating that I had this conversation recently with a woman. And I mentioned that they're giving me a message over here that my high CPU usage is affecting the quality of the meeting. So if you're not hearing me clearly, it's because I'm using too much CPU. Now, I have no idea exactly that means and how I correct that, what I'm supposed to do differently. So I should sit closer. I have no idea. Like, you know, they don't tell me how to fix that. They just tell me, you know, you're a bad boy, but they don't give me directs of how to fix it. Okay, so I'm a bad boy. Okay, I was saying the following. There's a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara says back to back, funny, strange Gemara. The Gemara says that the Gedola Havtocha Shenemres Nemar Lenoshim Yosemi Leanoshim, the promise of which the Bereshit gave to women is greater than that which he gives to men. It says, Nosim Sha'ananois, the women which are relaxed and they're not worried about they're getting Olam Haba, they're confident because the women have a better chance at it than men. The next Gemara says, Nosim B'mayzach, and so what is the schus of woman? And the Gemara says that they allow their husbands to learn Torah, they support their husband in Torah, and they take their children to school. To learn by the Reb, by the Malamed. This is pretty funny Gemara, right? The Gemara says, you know, wow, the women really have it good. By the way, what do they do exactly? It sounds like a little funny, like, you know, like if it's so it's so guaranteed, it should be pretty obvious. So I think what the Gemara is saying to me is that Chazal are saying that the greatness in Torah's eyes is the ability to serve others. The Bereshit made a natural instinct of a woman to that she feels happy and good about taking care of other people. She's willing to put her needs secondary and focus on the needs of her husband and her children. And that's a natural instinct which women are given. So that's the Gedola Havtach, which is given to the Nashim more than to the men, because the women do it, for the women that comes naturally. For the men, it's not natural. You have to work at it. So she said to me, so what about men? I said, that's why I said, stop for a second and think about all of the Gedolim that you've heard of, the stories that you've heard of, and which ones you look at and say, you have the tremendous respect for them. And all the many of the stories you will hear is because of the stories of how these people put the needs of other people ahead of themselves. Your Moshe Feinstein and all the stories about, you know, how he did that, or Yaakov, all these stories you read, the stories seem to have a common theme again and again and again, that they were taking care of other people. So God is in Klal Yisrael, the leadership in Klal Yisrael is that you're caring for other people. So the truth is, halachically, the concept of a gadol is the same thing. What's the difference between a child and an adult? So we've spoken about this idea in different terms. A child becomes a gadol in halacha, as opposed to a katan, when he becomes a bardas. So bardas, the Vilna Gaon, he was 10 years old, so he knew more in Torah than I'll ever know my whole lifetime. But he's not a bardas. And I'm, you know, 15 years old, you know, and I know like three blot of Gemara. Ich bin ja bardas, I'm better than the Vilna Gaon, you know, 10 years old. Like, you know, who are you fooling? Right? So the point of das doesn't mean it's an awareness of other people. We spoke about the das again many times, just last week already. Like, the das is the being able to connect and be aware of other people's needs, etc. That's the idea of understanding. There's a certain awareness of how society works and how people work, which a person gets. That's godless. The halacha of I can't be held accountable for my actions, and my kinyanim cannot be valid, my mitzvahs cannot be valid if I live in my own bubble. So the katan or the cherish or the shaita lives in his own bubble. He doesn't really get how the world works and what's going on with other people. He's not really aware of other people. That's katanus. Godless is that when we live with it. So the idea, we look at a person, we call him a gadol b'Torah, is a person who has taken the lessons of the Torah and made him a person who cares about others. So Rav Volber writes this, but he says that the definition of godless, Yimamish says this point, he says, you read many stories about how he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and not only that, he did many chassadim, he was very, very cared about Klal Yisrael very much. He says it's almost like, it's like Sufelig, it's called in Yiddish. It happens to be also, he says, that's a mistake, it wasn't happened to be, right? Our first example of leadership in Klal Yisrael is Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the example of Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership? Right? The Pesukim talk about that he cared. He went out of the palace and he cared about Klal Yisrael. And Rashi says that Nosan ain of a Liboy to care. Just like, and Rashi was the same Lashon by Kadosh Baruch Hu, Vayeda Elokim, Nosan ain of a Liboy, the Rashi was Nosan, and in the words of Vayeda Elokim, that said those same words of Das. So that's one of the psukim which we talk about by the Haggadah. And I think it's a lesson, a point to stop on in the Haggadah, is this message of that the definition of Das, godless as from a gadol to a cotton to a gadol, and you see it. You know, you can have there's a certain kids are sweet, etc., but there's a certain amount of that the world sort of revolves around them. It's not that they're bad people, but the world is there's an element of an egocentric reality. As a person matures, he becomes much more aware of the impact he's making on other people, and that's much more important to them. It also allows them that the social element becomes much more significant. But it's all the same process which is taking place. Okay, so that's the. Coming back to this point over here that the Chavos Lubavitch is saying, that if you want. To be the kohen, which is the word kahuna, is to serve. The kohen is the one, right? Rashi mentions one place that idea of a kohen is also of meshores. It's the serving of. He's taking care. He's serving. So you want to be the kohen? Yeah, you're gonna do the actions which you have to be willing to degrade yourself for Klal Yisrael. You have to be willing to do these actions. At the same time, of course, there's always a balance that he has to act in a way that Klaisel has to respect him for what he's doing. So you have this balance of so you have a Talmud Chacham that he's willing to do whatever it takes on the one hand. And on the other hand, there's a halacha that a person, once he's nisman al tzibur, he's a limit to what he's allowed to do publicly because he shouldn't degrade the covenant of Torah. So you have to keep that balance in mind. I grappled with this issue. I think I told you the story I had when I was once working on my roof and I had these mishalachim come. Did I tell you the story? No. Okay. So. I don't mind working on my roof, it's much cheaper than getting somebody else to work on my roof, cheapskate I am, that's for sure. The Yiddish cheapskate I definitely am. So I was working on my roof and I'm wearing I have this pair of black denim material, black jeans, and with my suspenders and my old fajabada like white shirt, which is my work shirt. And there was some mildew on the roof, whatever it was, I was busy with. I had this pump, one of these pumpers, which, and I was, you mix it with the water, then the mixture, and you schlep it up over there. So one of the drivers pulls up to my house, and the outcome, two chashur people wearing kapatas, and they're coming up to my front door to ask, to meet with me. Now, the driver, he clues in the people which are coming to who they're going to greet, So that he tells them that I'm the Rosh Karol, etc., And so I feel this. They don't know what I look like. For all they know, I'm the Chassidish workers working on the rooftop. I'm the worker on the roof, So they don't have to. I'm not coming down right now because I'm definitely not coming down. So my wife will take care of them. So there's no reason to engage them in conversation. So I figured discretion is a better part of valor. I just kept quiet. Of course, the driver, which I'm friendly with, notices me on the roof and decides to call out to me and say hello. But he's this sweaty guy, and he has to do it with his flair. So he calls out in this really, really loud voice, "Kvod Harav, Ma'alin Magodesh, Ma'alin Magodesh." So of course the Rosh Hakolim look up to the roof, like where's he looking, and they see me there. Now try to explain to two Israeli Rosh Hakolim what I was doing. I said, forget after about one half of a sentence, I says, Ishti Hilamata and she'll take care of you, end the conversation. But it's a good question. Am I allowed to do that? Am I allowed to do that menial work? But as much as maybe I'm not, or yes or no, but that's for me. But what about for you? If that's what you need, I got to do it. That's part of my job, of taking care of somebody. Somebody one time asked me, part of my tells of chinuch, like Rebbe Meir Zatzal, Rebbe Meir would say over these stories also, Rebbe Meir would pick up the garbage from the floor of the Beis Medrash. He said, because you have a chiyuv to mechab the Beis Medrash. If they'll listen to it, I'll do it. He said, I'm also being mechana my talmidim in that lesson. But besides being mechana the talmidim, there is this element I'm not sure who just joined in now because I don't have a picture. I just have a phone number and I don't have a name. But if you can mute, it would be helpful this way that we don't hear the background. Okay. That part of the message was you do whatever it takes to take care of the Talmidim, take care of Yeshiva, that the Rebbe should schlep the Talmud. I had a crazy mice, so this goes back, 24 years ago. So I was a Rebbe in Telz, and there was a Bacher who had very significant headache issues, to the point that he had to see a specialist. So there was one of the top specialists in the country was working in university hospitals, a very, very innovative woman in that area. And she agreed to see him. And I arranged the meeting, the appointment, and I came with him to the appointment. I took the Bacher to the appointment. His parents didn't live in Cleveland. So when I got there, the young man is a minor. He's 15, 16. And she says to me, "So who are you?" "I'm his teacher." She gave me this look like, what teacher in the world takes their student to the doctor? In the secular world, the teacher doesn't take the kids to the doctor.
Whereas the world of a Rebbe, that's what a Rebbe does. You take care of your Talmidim. That's part of the job, is taking care of them, which means if they need to go to the doctor, you take them to the doctor. So I was like, how do I explain this to her? That in the world that I'm coming from, the job of the Rebbe is to take care of somebody else, which means the gadol that they have to give me the respect of the Rebbe is because I'm here to mishamish them. So that's the message, that the Kohen can't sit on his high position, but the Afka, the Kohen, needs to be willing to lower himself, do whatever it takes to make sure the Beis HaMikdash is functioning properly, and do what has to be done. We've touched on three points: Trumas Hadeshen, Hitzoas Hadeshen, and the element of the fact that the Kohen was the one who was doing it, which was a lesson in Anivis. There's a chesinus of war at the beginning of the parasha. Which says Zeis Terasa Oilah. The parasha starts with Zeis Terasa Oilah. So the chesinus a twist. They say this is the parasha which gives me the message, the Torah, for the Oilah, the guy who lifts himself up. For the Baal Gaiva. This is the place in the Torah where it says, we're going to give you a message. You who think you are Oila, you're above everybody else. For you, we're going to write this parsha to teach you what the message is of what it really, what Godless and Kleister really means. So it's not Pasha Taish in the Pasuk, but it fits well in the messages that we're talking along over here. Okay. The Korban Oila is, it seems to be the Parshas Sav is a repetition. In some ways, is a repetition of Parshas VaYikra. VaYikra starts with the Parsha of Oila, then it goes to the Parsha of Mincha, and then to the Parsha of Shlomim, and then to Chatos, and then to Osham. And we have in Parshas Sav, you have Zeis Terasa Oila. Then Zeis Terasa Mincha, right? And then you have Zeis Terasa HaChatos, Zeis Terasa HaShom, and then Zeis Terasa Zevach HaShlomim. So the order is a little bit different. Oila and then Mincha is the same, but then Shlomim is put all the way at the end, as opposed to Shlomim being next. We go to Chatos HaShom and then Shlomim as opposed to, right? So in Parshas VaYikra, sort of first suggests the following. In Parshas VaYikra, we're coming from the angle of the Makriv. So an Oila, a Mincha, and a Shlomim are all Karbonos which can be brought as an Adava. A Chathas and an Oshim are Chayuvim. So we start off with the Karbonos which can be brought almost in any situation. It's the person wants to be Makriv them, give Makriv them. Then there's the Karbonos which are only brought because of a specific situation, the Chathas and the Oshim. That's the flow, because we're coming from the angle of the person which is being makrifit in the offering the korban. In Parashas Tzav, he points out that most of the messages over here are the halachas of the kohen, how the kohen is supposed to be makrifit. So obviously there's some element of that in Parashas Bikra as well, but the overarching framework of what we're focusing on is a different nekuda. So he says, from the Kohen's perspective, we're going to focus on levels of Kedusha. So Oila is the most, in certain senses, the most Kodesh like a Korban, because the whole Korban is brought on the Mizbeach. And then Mincha and Chatas and Oshram, which all are Kodesh Kedoshim. And then you go to Shlomim, which is Kachim Kalim, and Korban Torah, which are Kachim Kalim. So that's how he understands the chilik between the parashiyas. So that's, I think it's just a nice nakuda in Pshat. But then, of course, in Hirsch's inimitable way, that he says, okay, so we're talking to the Kohen, and the Kohen is the person who's working the Beis HaMikdash. And we start off with this idea of Torah, that the Oila is something he's bad called Lila. So, which means that the Lila is Halach Achra Yom. So by Kachim, different than by the Halachic day, which is night day, by Kachim, the day of the Korban is day night. It's a flow from day to from day into night. So the word Laila in a Hirsch's Teich is related to the word Balul, the things are mixed up, because nighttime is a thing, is a period when things are not clear. You know, obviously, in the world where you live, where there is no light, you know, the Mishnah Shem talks about, in the dim light, you confuse things. Something which looks like it really, really it's a post, you think it's a person you think it's a post, etc. So it's a night where we sort of, the time which he adds in the that we sort of lose control over the world. It's not that feeling of being confused, etc., is in conjunction with the fact that man sort of has to retreat, go back into his house, and we sort of accept the fact that we're not, the chayas come out. At nighttime is the time where we're not in control. Daytime, the yom, you know, which in verses he likes to do phonetic, he connects the word yom to the word kaim, kum, which is to stand up. It's we're able to go out there and we can conquer the world. We can go out there and take control of it. So the tekufa of yom is even though halachically the Roshim created the world where it was Laila and then yom, because first there is the physical world. And then we come into it, and we take possession of it, and we have a command to learn to take possession of the world. V'kivshua, we should be kovish the world. We should sort of take the world under our thumb and take advantage of it. But in the world of avoid of the karbonos, of the in the base of mikdash, so the day is not the idea that we're taking over. Like there's this nature, and we're sort of like, as it were, wrestling it away from nature for ourselves. That's not the purpose of the day. The purpose of the day is to have the opportunity to go out and do mitzvahs and do things, which nighttime we sort of have to step back. But day is to take advantage of that knowledge that we have and that abilities that we have and use them in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you do that, so then the nighttime is just an extension of the day. It's the night is, now that you've done that, it's not, okay, now I have to retreat because I didn't really accomplish as much. It wasn't a fight. So the language that he uses, the day to the Jew is a time for accomplishment in the service of and to give satisfaction to his God. And in the Jewish sanctuary of God, which is the base of Mikdush, it's the day which elevates the night too with it into the eternity of its life in the proximity of God. So it's Laila Halach Achra Yom. So I just, now, if you excuse me, I'll go into the current situation. So relinquishing control, in a certain sense, is Laila. Feeling in control is Yom. That's the way he's understanding it. So when we sort of retreat and say, you know, we don't really have control, we retreat back into our house. That's what would happen at nighttime. The chayus take over. And so that's a metaphor for where we are right now in a certain sense. Right? We thought we had control, and now we're sort of retreating in front of the forces of nature are beating us back. But if we understand that the reason why we have control, the reason why is not that man should be the pinnacle of the world, and that the purpose of it is to take control for ourselves, but to use that awareness, that control, that knowledge in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then even the times where we don't have full control, we just see that as an extension of whatever service Baruch Hu wants from us. So the Beis HaMikdash is Yom leads into Laila. The one night of the year, which is you find very few mitzvahs which are night oriented, which are night connected. Most mitzvahs are day connected. The Manishan Alayla Zemi Kolelos, the Vilna Gaon says, this is the only night of the year where there are mitzvahs which are night specific. Most mitzvahs, Sfiras HaOmer applies to the day, night and day. You know, we need a dafka night because you need a full day. Kriya Shema is day and night. Lulav you take by day, Sharfer you blow by day. Matzah you eat by night. So this night is different than all other nights, he says, because this is the only night of the year where nighttime is the time of the mitzvah. What happened the night of Pesach? We went into our houses, we put the dam in the mashkef, and we retreated into the house. So here we were almost, and there's the mashkis out there, which we're, on the one hand, we're seeing the forces of nature having this tremendous power over power out there, and we're powerless to stop it. If you go outside, you're powerless. So it's a nighttime in that sense. But at the same time, the beginning of the binyan of Klal Yisrael, the first mitzvahs which we do are night mitzvahs, which we recognize that sort of recognizing that we're not in control, Kodesh Baruch Hu is in control, is not losing the fight. It's recognizing that's how we're supposed to serve Kodesh Baruch Hu. So we're able to have mitzvahs which are connected with this idea of relinquishing and connecting to Kodesh Baruch Hu, which a mitzvah is a lashon of tzevis, and one shot is a lashon of connecting. Like tzav is even modern Hebrew, a tzevet is a group in the army, a group which are connected together is called a tzevet. Right? But tzav says lashon the Gemara is a companionship, etc. So mitzvahs are the companionship between man and his creator. So be able to, as we relinquish control of the world, recognize that it doesn't belong to us, is what allows us to dafka to yes connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So for us, nighttime is not. So I think, you know, we're looking at this kufa where we're seeing night around us. Even by daytime, we're feeling the night element in that respect. But that's not a stira. That's Adarav that should make us more aware that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who's in control and want to connect to him and want to serve him. Okay, that was the thought that I wanted to share with you. I want to tell you an interesting thought. I spoke today to an older chaver of mine who was one of the bachurim who was involved in helping me become frum. I mean, he was about 9 years older than me. So I was this young teenager, and he was already one of the oldest guys in Beis Medrash when I came to Telz then. So I spoke to him today, this is how we see how he's doing, etc. See, he is very comfortable saying what's on his mind to give most of the people. And he's an Alta Telzer Mahalach, you know, there's Averis, there's mitzvahs, you got to do tshuva, you know, that whole style. So he davens in a shul, and there's a fellow davens next to him who tends to talk during davening. Friendly guy, everybody loves him, he's the most wonderful guy. The guy cannot control himself. And he's told him multiple times, you got to stop, you can't talk during davening. So he called the fellow, he told me today or yesterday, but he called the fellow and he said, you know, I've been thinking about what's happening. So what do I see is happening? I see that the Russian is saying, you know, you come to shul and you daven, but you're not really davening. You're talking to the guy next to you, you're looking at your email and your phone. Says, you know what? You don't want to daven? You don't want to come to my house and daven? So don't come to my house and daven. Stay home. So that's what I'm seeing happening. That's what he says. He says, that's the message that I'm hearing over here, he says to the fellow. So I think it's time for you to really take to heart that maybe if you could really, and I know it's hard for you, he says, I'm not saying it's easy, but that's a tremendous, being sacrificing for the covenant of Kodesh Baruch Hu is a tremendous source of Yeshua for Klal Yisrael. If you could undertake to really commit that to control yourself, it could be tremendous schools. That could be the schools which should bring, you know, bring the Yeshua to save Klal Yisrael from this terrible mugafe. As he told me, he said to the guy, he said, oh my gosh, wow. Like, you know, if I would say that to my Talmidim, I would, you know, they either never talk to me again or I have to pick them up, you know, send them for mental health, you know, care afterwards because they, you know, I knocked them down too hard. By the way, that's how my Rebbe spoke to me. So this is, you know, the Musar Yeshiva, you know, that I grew up in, there's a virus. You know, we don't know why the Holocaust happened. They're all tzaddikim, and you know, it's Sisri Torah. It says, nay, excuse me, Torah's happened twice because we do a virus. Rashi Reb Chaim would say that multiple times. He says, I'm not talking with any specific person and pointing a finger at him and saying the ones who survived were better than the others. I'm not saying, but the generation as a klal, there are things which are wrong which need to be corrected. You know, so that message is clearly being sent at us as well. You know, there are things which are wrong which need to be corrected. I personally, after being in Silver Spring for 23 years, I tend to focus on more of the positive way of saying it than the negative way of saying it. My first 2 years, I did it the other way. And the Talmidim from then still said, you know what, Rebbe, you've mellowed out too much. You wimped out too much. But to think about that, you know, what can we change? What can we do differently? What can we as a Yechidim? What can we as a Tzibur?
you know, do differently. And obviously, you know, tefillah is a very obvious thing that we that is tefillah b'tzibur has been taken away from us. And to accept that, that there's something that we need to respect it more when we have it and appreciate it more, attendance to it and to being on time and taking advantage of what tefillah b'tzibur has to offer I think is something really to think about that we should want to try and, you know, in this tkufa of relinquishing our control over the world, the laila, that we're sort of retreating into our houses and we don't have control over the forces outside. The chayus are out there taking over the world. We don't need wild animals anymore. We can get something which is measured in picometers, taking over the world. That doesn't mean that that's just another way to remind us that it's a vehicle to recognize and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that relinquishing control of the world is whatever. When we do have control, it's not because we're the boss and we're the ones in control. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. And tefillah, in many ways, is the vehicle which represents that. That for us, tefillah is the process of human being recognizing everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think it's a lesson which we can, the Yom Laila relationship, which we're grappling with right now, and which we will deal with the night of the Seder, which is mamash a Laila element of a unique Laila at the beginning of Klal Yisrael. So hopefully this Laila which we're having right now will end up being Laila Kayom Yair. It'll be a night which has the brightness of day with the clarity of the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which will bring Mashiach Be'ez Hashem. Okay.